So how many of you have heard the respondent-driven sampling? Okay, very good. So then I have nothing to declare. And because you've heard of respondent-driven sampling, that makes my presentation easier. So this is our co-authors. We had now, myself and none of our co-authors has anything to declare. So the respondent-driven sampling, as many of you know, is both an effective recruitment tool to reach hidden population at a risk of HIV, and also a sampling method. So then it allows us estimate of population, unbiased population estimates. So today I'm only focused on the statistical model part, not the recruitment part. The sampling plan starts with a few seeds, and then the seed is going to recruit more controlled coupons, and then more, okay, we call those recruiter, and then recruits, and the recruits become recruiter and recruit more. So we go on, and several waves, and the sampling, your sample quickly reaches your desired size, and with very minimal cost, so that's why it gets very popular internationally. As the waves goes on, and originally it was believed after four or five waves, the sample reached equilibrium. So that means no matter where you start your seed, eventually, then the sample distribution becomes stable. And the ways that after that point, we can make estimation of the population, not directly from the sample, but actually through the social network information. So social network information is critical here. So then in the original method, was only need two pieces of information. Who recruit whom was tracked by recruitment coupon. And also the size of the participants, we call the EGOS network size. I believe many of you believe this effective recruitment method, and that's actually a hackathon, the original slide. So it was believed the sampling can overcome the typical chain referrals limitations, so can make unbiased estimate. So we question mark this, and also requires very minimal formative research. And we also question that, and then the number of additional questions was believed minimal, and those are our questions. So then RDS models are based on very strong and often unrealistic assumptions. For example, respondents know each other, so they assume the ties are reciprocal. And also assume respondents can accurately report their network size. And then this proportion, recruitment probability proportion to their degree, that means if you have a large network and you probably can more likely to recruit, and then smaller network is less effective. So then also also assume when peers do the recruitment, it's making random selection from your network. Skip this. So we actually question most of the assumptions. All right. The questions from an empirical social network research from HIV field, our study at least suggests people with large network often underreport the network size, and then if you knowing each other doesn't mean you're going to recruit each other reciprocally. So those are all could undermine the estimation. So even those proponents of the RDS models, and they also says in their paper, if the reporting errors are non-random, and really could pose a threat to the model validity. And also the assumptions about the network size and how recruitment pattern was modeled also extremely important for the validation of the sample, model. And later fund research also realized that, remember we said it requires minimal formative research, the developer. Then later they found actually if the population has bottleneck in the network, that significantly affect their accuracy of that estimate. And a confidence interval that's widely built in RDS 80, the software, and used by many countries, that was misleadingly narrow and inaccurate. But people didn't realize this part. I feel very surprised. Is my cursor right here? So then a typical RDS question asks, how many people do you know and you have encountered? So that's they ask her, who do you know? Very general. And then assume those people come back to the study is a random sample of this. But we believe there's many steps in between. So actually you know some people, you don't necessarily want to recruit those people. And some people that you have no plan to recruit and they actually show up. So then there's actually dynamic process in when the coupon passing on the street. Some people take your coupon, some people don't take your coupon. And so there was a lot happening here. And you just assume from this directly here and as a random sample, that's probably too confident. So this is our study, which I'm a PI on. So it's an ongoing study right now to look at the peer recruitment dynamics and the recruitment network. So it's intensive social network study when respondent-driven sampling is implemented among injection drug users. So this is the first empirical study looking at the recruitment process and network. Normally in the past, the evaluation are limited to compare with other alternative probability sample or computer simulation and some statistical approach. Those all in office has nothing to do with the field. But our approach is empirical social network social metric network data collection. Social metric we ask each participant very intensive, detailed social network question, ask them to generate a name of the network based on drug use, sex, relationship, and support, and also the actual encounter of the recruitment process. After that, we have a list of questions for each individual. And then at the end, we are able to, each participant allowed to name 15 people at the beginning, and then later I can add more. And so with up to 20 network members, and some of them actually are overlapping person, we are able to connect those dots together and construct social metric network. So that allows we look beyond the study participants. So we are looking at what affect the peer recruitment decision making and intention, and also what affects actual recruitment patterns. All right, so we go through formative research and recruit a very typical RDS sample of 526, exactly the same protocol and the CDC sponsored NHBS protocol. We want to make it a typical. And then, so as I mentioned before, we have a baseline survey and we give them a coupon, let them recruit and come back and do a 2-month survey, ask them what exactly happened. We have street outreach and to follow up individual, we have a follow up rate close to 80%. So this is the sample. So you can see this chain, it's really long. The largest wave is 29. So it's a very, very good RDS sample and we have only 6 seeds. So the sample is very heavy homeless and Puerto Rican, African American, and some others. So then, the total number of alters. So the people being named, we call the alter. So the participant we call the ego. So we total number of alters in our data set, in relationship level data sets, nearly 5,000 alters. Baseline we generate like 2,000, about 2,000 names. And then second month, we also generate another half. So then at the 2 months, about this much, that's new names. So then about 24% of those alters are actually study participants. So you can see like most people are not a study participant. So we actually go beyond our ability to understand a large sample. So then, remind you of this assumption, and we found among those seeds, among those people who returned to the 2 months follow-up, right, only 46% of the coupons match the recruiter's ID. So that means the rest, like 44%, as the coupon circulate on the street before they come back to the study. So our hypothesis is when recruiters making recruitment decisions, it's very highly selective, and they try to recruit people who think are reliable enough to come to the study, and tend to recruit strong ties and have high level of addiction, and need money, and also they share probably drugs and unrelated resource. That means probably high-risk network members. So here's the result. So this is the individual level. We aggregate the network data at individual level and compare the size of the network, of the reported network. Let's see. So the typical RDYS questions correlated with our recruitment intention network. So if you can recruit unlimited people who you recruit, but if you only choose five and name from number one to five, you name that. So that's correlated, the RDYS typical sample. But when come to the actually effort, the encounter, there's no correlation with the typical question. Our name generator, the injection size, is more correlated with most of those. Then if you look at this coupon actually given out, so that's more correlated with the action, recruitment effort, and not much intention. So this is a similar result, but at a relationship level. So the coupon given out, the actual coupon given out was more related to the make an effort, less with the plan. So then we use the multi-level mixed modeling and to control the clustering effect within a participant. So then what's important here? Okay, people tend to recruit those they inject a drug with, the intention, not those who they lived with. But when they make an actual effort, those who receive the support from the support network show up, and those inject with others, high-risk individuals show up. Okay. So qualitative funding is similar. Want to recruit the people, have a relationship with them, and they perceive that some people need money, and then reliable, and addiction, have some level of addiction, so they need money, but not too much, so you're all over the places. And then there's a lot of things happen that actually affects the actual recruitment. So the typical RDS network size estimation questions are overly general and modest related to the intervention intention, but not the actual process. And coupon given out more associated with the recruitment effort, intention, prioritize the intention, but not less with general intention. And half of the coupon was redistributed on the street. I'm not going to repeat this. Okay, so limitation, we have a lot of analysis just started. We have a lot of variables not considered yet, and we, especially the social metric data analysis, network analysis haven't begun, and triangulation of qualitative and quantitative analysis just started. And so the next implication for the future, so we really hope statisticians and HIV researchers can work together to make the improve the methodology, and it's time to for statisticians to pay attention to the reality and stop making messes in the office. So if you have statistician co-workers, and I hope you can pass the message to encourage collaboration. Thank you. Mm-hmm.